This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 48. Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is. It's a show where we focus on everything to do with fantasy books and authors. We talk to authors who write all kinds of stuff, whether it's epic fantasy, dark fantasy, horror fantasy, swords and sorcery, urban fantasy, you name it, we've got it here on the show. We try to bring you the best and brightest authors and people from all the various corners of the fantasy book world. First off, in this episode, I just want to jump in and say it's my update for this week, and I have been spending the entire weekend getting a full week of marketing and social media ready to take over and do a bunch of things this week regarding the release of The Charm Runner, book one of the Broken Throne series. That book actually came out last Friday, and this whole week of launch week has a bunch of stuff planned. I'm doing some takeovers on some other authors' Facebook groups where I'm going to be giving away some cool stuff. So if you want to find out where I'm going to be and when I'm going to be there, check out my page at jamiedavisbooks.com or in my Fun Fantasy Readers group that's associated with it, and you can check that out. The book is now live on Amazon and available in Kindle Unlimited as well, and it's doing pretty well. I'm excited about that. It's the story that tells the tale of a smuggler of black market magic in a world where magic is against the law. And if you like that kind of thing, I urge you to check it out. As always, if you're interested in more information on my books and what I'm up to, check out my fan group on Facebook, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, and on my website and blog, jamiedavisbooks.com. I always look forward to hearing from you, and it's important that you reach out to me if you have any questions or anything about what I'm doing or about the podcast or anything. Just drop me a line. I'd love to hear from you. All right, time to get into this week's episode interview, and I'm super excited. I got to step up and have an episode with a good friend of mine and author, Sarah Nofke. Sarah is an Amazon bestseller. She writes YA and NA, which is young adult and new adult science fiction, fantasy, paranormal, and urban fantasy. In addition to being an author, she's a mother, a podcaster, and a college professor. She holds a master's in management and teaches college courses on business and writing. Most of her students have no idea, however, that she tolls away in her spare hours crafting stories about great fictional characters. Sarah Nofke's books are top-rated bestsellers on Amazon, always in the top ranks, and among my personal favorites as well, especially her recent series she's been putting out books in, the Unstoppable Liv Bouffant series. Just a ton of fun. I laugh. I get angsty because there's a lot of stuff going on and a lot of dangerous situations, but Liv is just an amazing character, and Sarah does a great job making that series super interesting. Anyway, check out my interview with Sarah. It's coming up next, and I hope you enjoy it. We had a fantastic time chatting together. I just started Liv Bouffant, the first book, Rebellious Sister, and loving it.
Are you?
Yes.
Wow, I'm honored that you're reading. That is so super cool. Thank you.
No. I try to read at least a little bit of every book, every author's book, even if it's just the read for free part in Kindle. But no, I got yours because I figured Amy would want to read it too, and I'm just loving it. I'm just, in fact, I was reading some more before we started, and I'm like, oh, it's already 12 o'clock. I have to stop.
That's the best news. And I mean, a fellow author, like I said, I'm honored. Thank you. No, it's funny because I was working on that book when we were in Bali.
Were you?
Well, it came out the very end of January. Okay. So I guess I was working on book two. I finished that book on New Year's Eve because I wanted it to be done by 2018. But yeah, so we were working on the Liv Bouffant when, you and I and Amy were all hanging on the beach.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll just go ahead and jump into the podcast part, and we'll see how it goes. And I'm sure we'll have a good time. I'm looking forward to this.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Awesome. Hi, Sarah. I want to welcome you to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. This is great. Great to be here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. You know, it's you and I met at a recent author trip to Bali, of all places, which was just a blast. And since then, I've been wanting to have you on the show. So I'm looking forward to chatting with you.
Thank you. I know, of all places, Bali, and you and your lovely wife, Amy, were the first people that my daughter and I met. Remember, y'all?
I do.
Steered us in the right direction because we were so lost and jet lagged, and we got on the elevator with you guys, and I still remember.
I do too.
Y'all were our first Bali people.
I do too. And that was a lot of fun. And it's neat to see that you and your daughter travel like that. It's so cool.
Thank you. Yes, she's 7. And so it's really funny because some people thought that I was insane for bringing her to Bali, but it just was like, well, of course, if I'm going to Bali, she's my little buddy. So we have a lot of fun traveling, and that's where I get a lot of story ideas.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, let's tell everybody a little bit about yourself. Why don't you just tell us who you are and maybe a little bit about what got you started writing?
Oh, of course. My name is Sarah Nofke. That's the name that I write. And I write under. And I am a fantasy and science fiction author. But these days I'm doing a lot more fantasy than science fiction. But my books always tend to have kind of a sci-fi element just because, you know, I grew up watching Doctor Who and Red Dwarf and, you know, things that were kind of science-fi, but also with that fantasy edge. I am currently working on my 50th novel. So I haven't been doing this too long. I published my first novel in 2014, and I had my own universe, and it was called The Dream Travelers. And I did that for about 5 series. And then I joined up with Michael Anderle. And since then, we've been writing novels together. And it's so much fun. But I got into this because I used to work in an office building and I worked for a university. And, you know, that was what I did for years. And I still teach online classes at the university. But I had my daughter and, you know, I mean, you have children, you know, you stay at home and you're, you know, just kind of adapting. And I think because it was the first time I was out of a professional work environment, these characters just started talking in my head. And I guess they were always there, but I never got the opportunity to hear them because, you know, you got work and deadlines and all these other things that I guess take over for the characters. And it's so funny because right before I had my daughter, I would always go to the library on my lunch break. And I remember that I would close my eyes and I would walk down the aisle of books, and I would have my hand on the finger, my fingers on the spine of the books, and I would just randomly stop and pull out a book. And I remember thinking, I'm looking for a book and I just can't find it. I don't even know what I'm looking for. You know, like the librarian couldn't even help me find it. And it wasn't until I wrote my first novel in 2014 that I realized I was looking for the book that I needed to write. And you and I just had this conversation right before we got started about how we write what we want to read. So that's how I got started. I got bored and I was inspired.
And that's fantastic. And you're so right. I think we are searching for that story inside of us and you seem to be as full of stories as I am. I talk to some authors that struggle with the next story, but I just have stuff pouring out of me. I have so many ideas. I can't write them all, it seems like. And it seems like you're in the same boat.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're on to what, like some astronomical number as far as your number of books?
I've got
books.
30. So you're ahead of me, but I'm going to catch
you. Just barely. I know. You know what? If I took a nap, you would probably catch me at this point. Because like you said, it's funny because when I first started writing, I started writing really, really fast, right? And the reason was I was certain if I didn't, that those characters were going to go away. The story was going to evaporate in my brain and it would be over and I would not have completed my novel. And now that we've done this, you know, a few times, like you said, you're overflowing with stories. So it's so nice because I have that confidence that I didn't have, not really with the first 25 novels. I think even up to that point, I was thinking, the characters are going to go away. The stories, you know, I'm going to forget. I'm going to lose my inspiration. And it's finally now that you realize, no, there will always be an idea. This is a craft, you know, it's not a fluke.
And it sounds to me, because of the way you keep talking about the characters talking in your head, that you really see yourself as a character-driven writer. Would that be true?
Absolutely. And I know you can relate and not think that we're crazy when you say, you know, oh, I'm hearing voices. You know, I've got these fictional people talking to me.
All the time.
I know a lot of people would be like, oh, that's a little scary. But you understand it. And absolutely character-driven. And that's, you know, always where my stories start. I just create the characters and they seem to just tell me their stories. And it's funny. I was talking to somebody the other day who has a book club, and they invited an author there. And this author talked about those characters. And she described herself as that tortured author because the characters don't leave her alone until they tell, you know, until she tells their story. I don't feel tortured. But, you know, I maybe haven't read, you know, met that character yet.
I like that. You know, I'm not tortured either. And one of the things that I started doing audiobooks a lot recently, and one of the things that's been a joy for me has been auditioning the narrators for my books, because I think of the voice of the main character in my head, and I try to find the person auditioning that closest matches the how that voice should sound. And so far I've been able to like nail it every time. They just seem to just fit the role when I find the right person.
That's awesome. And as an audio lover, that's, you know, so important, because it really does need to, you know, feel right. It does, you know, that it can't have the wrong narrator. And it's so much fun when they first come to life, right?
Oh, I it's one of the biggest joys I have is to, and that first time they read that 15-minute snippet of your book to kind of give you an idea of how they plan on performing. And it is just like my word. I'm like, I wrote this. I can't believe I wrote this. It's coming to life.
I love it. And I love that, you know, after 30 books, you know, you're still excited, because, you know, that's part of the joy of this is, you know, our stuff coming to life. And I remember when my first book got narrated and I was like, oh my God, somebody's reading my, you know, words. So, you know, it's fun that you're still able to enjoy that process.
Well, it's Amy's reading one of my books now, and she's generally my first reader. Like nothing gets out that hasn't gone through her first.
And I love it.
And she, you know, she's reading something now, and I'm just, sometimes I sit there and I just watch her while she's on her Kindle. And it's just like, and
no,
I know
pressure,
she thinks,
right?
It's creepy. I don't want to rush her, but I'm just wanting that reaction. I want to see where she, like, every now and then I'll be like, where are you now?
Oh my
and she'd be
God.
Like, she looks at her Kindle. One time she did it recently. She looked at the Kindle and she went, I'm 33% through. And I'm like, that's no help.
Like, I know where that is. No, I need a scene. You know, what dialogue is happening?
What just happened?
And I laugh, you know, because it does kind of seem creepy, but I'm the exact same way. You know, when a reader's like, oh, I really, you know, laughed out loud. Where did you? So I can keep doing that, you know, because you know how they have the highlighted stuff on Kindle and you can go and see what people have highlighted in your own books. It always surprises me. I'm like, that's the line that resonated with you?
You know,
okay.
I've never done that. I should probably go and see about doing that, because I've never thought to do that before. Is there a way that you can like skip to the things that are highlighted or find out what's highlighted? Or do you have to actually go through the book page by page?
No, you can actually find it. And I just was reminded of this recently because I went and purchased my own book. And whenever I did, it had been out for about 2 weeks. And so I got to see those highlights. But I think that if you purchase it early on, you may have to resync it or something. It needs to go to Amazon and find out what's been highlighted. Okay. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
So, but yeah, whenever you go into the book at the very beginning, you can do the options where there's a table of contents and everything. You should see it on there that says highlighted quotes or something like that. And
awesome.
It'll take you, you know, to each one.
I know
really
what I'm doing this afternoon.
Yeah, it's called, right? It's called Popular Highlights. And I just pulled it up on one of my novels and it doesn't have it bolded or anything. So that means there isn't anything that's been highlighted. But I think that that's because I need to resync it, you know, because it needs to get the updated version. Right. But yeah, do it. It'll be fun.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. Okay, well, that's kind of cool. So, like, what was one of the things that, like, most caught you by surprise when you found something like that?
It wasn't what I would think. You know, sometimes I'll use flowery language and, you know, I mean, my favorite novel is The Great Gatsby. So I love, you know, these beautiful quotes that just fall off, you know, your tongue and, you know, it's like poetry. But what surprised me was it wasn't always those quotes that the readers had highlighted. A lot of times it was pivotal scenes, you know, like that uh-oh moment. And so that was really surprising, or just like little jokes, or I could tell when they were collecting clues, you know, when I had just like sprinkled in this foreshadowing. So that was really, really surprising. And I guess people are using that quote feature to keep track of things for their own, you know, tracking purposes, which is pretty cool.
That is cool. I love doing this podcast for a lot of reasons, but it's because I learn little things like that from other authors. And that's something that I'm going to definitely follow up on and see what the people have found interesting in my books. So that's kind of cool. So, you know, we talked about characters in a little bit and you were saying that they speak to you. Is it just the main character, or do you start seeing, like, as you start writing the book, do like other characters start coming out and speaking to you as well? Or how's that work for you?
Well, I mean, it's definitely the main character, I think, the majority. But, you know, I've gotten woken up in the middle of the night. 3 o'clock in the morning is my typical hour. That's when the characters, I think, you know, that's the witching hour. You know, and I think it just depends. And it's interesting because I do those character outlines before I start the book. So I know like who my cast is. And for instance, with the series that I'm working on right now, there was this character that wasn't in the cast and he just pops up and he just, you know, starts speaking. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to throw this guy in there. I'm not kidding you. He's become the most loved character of the entire series. Like if Rudolph is not in a, you know, every other chapter, you know, I hear about it. So I guess you just never know what's going to come through, right?
No, I completely understand that. I wrote a character that I just brought in for a little comic relief in my first novel. And it's a middle-aged paunchy vampire that, you know, gets treated by one of the paramedics in that story. And he just kind of shows up another time later in the story. And people were like loving him. So I had to like put him in every novel at some point or another because they just wanted to know what Gibby was up to. Like, you know, what kind of trouble is he in now? And it was always a good, nice aside to pull people a little bit out of the story and give them a little time to relax and laugh if something serious was going on. And it's kind of a plot device, but it's this character driven thing that people have really fallen in love with.
I love that. And it reminds me that we're not always in control of these things, you know?
Absolutely not.
And I mean, people think it's crazy. They'll be like, well, this is, you know, the outline and don't you just follow? Can't you just know, you know, because it takes its own path sometimes, right?
Absolutely. Well, it's not like it's a research paper. I mean,
you know, it's true.
You know, you don't have like bullet points. And once you're done writing the bullet points and the paragraphs, it's done because so much happens in between. You know, I don't know how much you outline. I write like a sentence or two for each chapter and sometimes a little bit more if there's a lot going on. But that becomes 2,000 to 3,000 words. And that stuff comes out of nowhere. I mean, I know the characters and I know what has to happen, but I have no idea how they're going to get from the end of the last chapter to the beginning of the next chapter. And that's just the joy of it for me.
I think it is the joy of it. And I outline very similarly, and my outlines are about, you know, 1,500 words, a sentence or two per chapter. And I was talking to one of my first readers, and he was trying to get me to be more specific with the outlines and, you know, because that was where his mind was going. And I was like, no, like, it's almost like it needs to have that creative freedom. And like, if I over outline things, I think that I miss those random inspirations, you know, that just still to this day take my breath away, where I'm like, oh my God, I didn't see that coming, you know?
Absolutely. And it's the times when I've written myself into a corner I think some authors do that and they think they have to give up. And I do that and I look at it as a challenge. And usually something insane happens that it makes the story even more wonderful because I had to get myself out of an impossible situation. And that's the joy of it. No, I didn't know. bad things happen sometimes, and sometimes things you just have to kind of work your way through it the hard way. And that happens to my characters as much as it happens in real life. And I think that, you know, making it always having an out is gives myself gives myself the freedom to be creative. And I think that's important.
Well, and if the author is surprised, you know the reader is going to be, you know, falling out of their chair. And it's interesting because I've unfortunately had to kill characters. I don't do it as much with the current novels because the audience doesn't like it. But I used to be known for it. But I had this very loved character that unfortunately met an untimely demise. And the readers were upset. And I was like, honestly, I didn't even see it coming. Like, I was floored when it happened. And, you know, so I think that, you know, we can always leave ourselves open to that possibility of, you know, the unknown. But if we over outline, I don't know. I don't know that it would work for me.
I've killed off characters and only one has ever come back. And that's because my wife liked that character.
I love it. And I love actually, that Amy's there.
You can I actually created a mug for some of my earliest readers because they heard the story about how she saved Freddie's life. And like I brought him back in the next book. So I made a mug with the logo from my paramedic series on it. And it says Freddie Lives. And a bunch of people bought that mug. And I gave it away to some of the people, and then we have one at our house. And it's just like, every time I see that mug out on the counter, I'm just like laugh because that's just one of those things that, you know, I found a way to bring him back and it made sense. And he wasn't really dead after all. He was just hiding. So
it's so funny. And Amy, you know, all of your readers are probably thanking her and maybe sending her messages on the side. Get Jamie to do this. Have him do that. <You
know? laughs> if they only knew how easy that would be. Well, and you know, and the thing is, he's a zombie chef, right? So,
oh my God.
Like he's a 5-star chef who got turned into a zombie, and now he works in secret for these paramedics, making their meals for them. And every time he comes out and serves, they have to check. He has to hold up his hand so they can check all his digits to make sure everything's still there.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious!
Yeah, it's just a nice little joke. And but he had to live so he could assume that role. So that was kind of fun.
Your characters sound like, you know, they're really fleshed out, these very deep individuals. I love it.
Well, but they weren't originally. They just kind of, that's like, he was an ambulance call for what my main character to go on. And he'd made some food for himself, but he can't really eat because he's undead, but he still wanted to try to taste it. And he ended up choking on it and they had to go save him. And
oh my God.
In the midst of all of that, the rest of his backstory came out, you know, and so, yeah, it's that's how I write. I pose scenarios for myself and then I try to figure out why the scenario is happening while I'm writing. So
I love it. I love it. And, you know, it's a good reminder that as an author, we can do whatever we want. So if you want to bring back this character, you can do that. And that's another thing I think that my longtime writing has actually given me. I used to worry a lot about like, well, what if I can't figure it out? Or what if, you know, I have this impossible problem? And now I have enough experience that I go, you know what? You're the writer. You can do whatever you want. You know, we have this creative freedom. And if you need technology, you make it happen. You know, if you need a scenario to happen, you know, you have that right. It has to make sense, you know.
It does. And I mean, I don't like to use magic as a crutch, even though we're writing in a fantasy setting. But there are times when magic inside the rules of the world can be used to solve some problems. And there's always consequences, but it can work. And that's important. I want to shift gears here because I don't want to miss talking about your books because I just started reading the Unstoppable Liv Beaufort series. Don't call her Olivia, please. and it is really catching me immediately. I just started reading the Rebellious Sister book one, and I am just enthralled with it already. And
thank you.
So I want you to kind of give everybody the elevator pitch for this series, because she's it's character driven. You get to know her immediately and start seeing her quirks and her foibles and things, and just drawing you in more and more. So tell us a little bit about Liv and about this series.
Absolutely. And thanks for reading. I'm honored. And to get that positive review from you is amazing. Like you said, don't call her Olivia, but her, name is Olivia, but she goes by Liv. And that started recently. And she's rebellious. So our first title, The Rebellious Sister, is about her. Anyways, Liv, she gave up her role inside of her family as a warrior inside of the House of Seven. And this House of Seven is our governing agency for magicians. And so her family has this royalty blood, but she didn't want it. And she, a series of deaths just threw her into a different life, and she became pretty much immortal. And she's an engineer she tinkers and stuff. More deaths happen, and then her family, causing her to have to make a decision. Is she going to unlock her magic and take on her role as a warrior, helping magicians to govern magic, or her family will lose everything? And so she's really faced with a hard choice, because she's a rebel. She doesn't want to conform. And the House of Seven is all about conformity. But we have lots of magicians, and we have elves. There's Fae. I've just had so much fun with, the characters in this series, and all the adventures that Liv goes on, because she just speaks her mind. She's very snarky. And it's funny, when we were coming up with the idea for this series, Michael Anderley and I, he said, I want you to write a fantasy series, and I want the main character to be short and blonde and really sassy. And I was like, Michael, I think you just described me. And it's funny, because it's made this whole running of this series so much easier. Liv isn't exactly like me, but, that's kind of where I got this inspiration. And she's much braver than I am. She's much more talented.
It's funny you said that, though, because I thought of you as I was, when she made it. There was a comment very early in the story about how she was height challenged, and I don't think of you as short, but when I started picturing her, I thought of you. And it's funny that Michael would say something like that, because that's just like him.
He is. And he is just really good about drawing out those ideas, or, he has a really good instinct for those things. I mean, as one would expect, he's got lots of collaborators, and, he's one of the top indie writers, in the industry. But he and I just had a session the other day, and it's funny, because he really pushes me to take the risk that I don't think I would have taken. I would have never ridden myself knowingly into a book. I think I would have felt like that was too close. I have a character that I feel like I relate to the most from my original series, and he's a middle-aged British redhead, and that's me. That's where I write my character, and he's kind of a jerk, and I'm self-proclaimed kind of a jerk sometimes, but he gets to like say all the things that I think go on in my head. Anyways, my point is that before Michael gave me this push, I always put myself in characters as disguised. But this one's much more like, out there. I'm like, nope, that's me. And she has a sidekick, which is a black and white cat. And I, of course, have a black and white cat named Finley. And so, it's reality becomes fiction.
It's great. Isn't it wonderful to have somebody that can push you like that, that can help you, move forward with the story in a different way than you might have by yourself? I've done that on a few occasions, and it's been very liberating. It's changed my writing style for the better in projects after that.
I think so. And, for instance, you've got Amy, but it sounds like you have collaborated on on other things where you were pushed. And I used to write in a closet, you know, metaphorically speaking. And especially in the early days, I didn't want anybody to know my storyline because they were going to influence it. Or what if they didn't like it? Or, you know, all these insecurities. And I have a lot less ego in it now. And I recognize, no, I mean, these first people you talk to about these ideas, you know, they're your first, you know, they'll give you that indication whether this is an idea that's going to stick or not. If you lose their attention. But then also, like you said, pushing things because, you know, Michael and I, we really went through all these different scenarios. And he did. He helped to put to, you know, really push me outside of my comfort zone and to do some things that were a little bit more complicated. This is a very complicated world that we've created for the Liv Bafont series. And there's lots of rules. We have readers that have been awesome enough to catalog the rules, the magic, you know, all these different things and the races and you know, just how things happen so that I can remain consistent. But I don't think I would have done that if Michael hadn't given me that push.
I like that. And I've had similar experiences writing with other authors that have helped me. I think have helped both of us in those situations to learn more about our own styles and to draw the things that most complement each other into our own style moving forward. And that's been super helpful. So what's next on the path for you? Are you still writing more in this series?
I am. Like I said, I'm on my number 50th novel. And this is going to be the 9th book in the Liv Bafont series. We're going to go to 12 unless the readers are just, you know, like, oh, we want more. But this is the longest series I've ever had. Before that, it was only like 7 was the max. So it's really fun. We just started the third arc. And then after that, we've got a spinoff. And I don't want to give any spoilers, but we have a character in this main series and the readers really, really love her. He or her, I said no spoilers, and then I used a pronoun. She's going to get a spinoff, and I'm really excited for that one because it's something I've never done before in a fantasy realm. So that should keep me busy all the way through 2019.
Awesome, and I'm sure people should check that out and wait for that with anticipation. And in the meantime, they've got all these great books to plow through, plus the rest of your back catalog, which is, I'm sure, excellent as well.
Thank you.
So, as we kind of wrap up here, we're getting towards the end. Where do you like to interact most with your readers? I mean, is there a place either on social media or have you ever been to like a con or someplace like that where you've met people in person?
I love meeting readers in person. It's funny because the other day I was in Italy and I randomly told a reader that was in Germany, and this is the one that catalogs all of my information and he's my first reader. He just asked for that, you know, opportunity. And I was like, absolutely. But anyways, I said, hey, I'm going to be in Rome. And I just was asking like, hey, you know, do you recommend anything? Because I guess I assumed, you know, maybe he'd been there or something. And he's like, hey, well, why don't I just meet you at the Colosseum? So that was really, really fun. And I just throw that out there because I randomly like to meet up with readers, you know, like I live in LA, like let's have lunch or something. Because where I actually interact with them the most is on Facebook. We have a series of groups on Facebook for the books through Michael Anderley. His publishing company is LMBPN, and we have LMBPN Ladies, which is not just for ladies. It's just that we originally started that because I was writing chick lit at the time. But we have lots of guys in there. But there's also other groups. There's the Contharian Gambit, Protected by the Damned. These are all groups that are inside of, you know, his urban fantasies catalog or his science fiction. And I can't tell you how awesome it is to go on there. And the readers, that, you know, they tell me what they want a lot of times.
It's a super active and engaged group. It's really awesome. I'm in the Catharian Gambit group, and it's a lot of fun to kind of go through there and just see what people are talking about.
Isn't it? I'm really surprised by the amount of interaction that happens. And I'm also, I have my own Facebook page. So that's where we get to know each other, I think, most often. And then who knows what comes up from there. I'd like to do more conferences in the future, but they're time consuming, as you know.
They absolutely are. And they take a lot out of you. I mean, I like meeting people in person at the, I go to like one or two a year. There's one that's like right 15 minutes from my house, and it's a little local con at the community college where I teach part time. And I set up a table there and I have my books out, and it's a lot of fun, but it's a long day. And it can be a lot, although I love doing it and it's great to meet everybody. It's not something, I know authors that go to a con every weekend. They're traveling 40 or 50 weekends a year sometimes to try to go to every con they can possibly get to. And I couldn't imagine doing that. When would I have time to write?
That's exactly what I was going to say. I think, you know, it depends on the author. I will say that it really helps me to remember why we do this and, you know, maybe to not take certain parts of it for granted. I had the opportunity to do a read-a-thon at an elementary school for one of my young adult novels. And I came back so motivated from that because it's not that I take this for granted, this, you know, occupation as a writer. I love it. And I'm so grateful that I get to do it. But maybe sometimes I don't think of what we do is that big of a deal, or you kind of lose the idea. Anyways, I was standing up in front of this fifth grade elementary class and talking about my books, and they were like, oh my God, how'd you become a writer? Oh my gosh, this is so cool. Where do you get your ideas from? How do I become a writer? I left that so motivated, and I was like, oh my God, I'm a big deal. Like, writing books is a hard thing and people think it's really cool. So I think that it's really important to get out to those conferences or whatever the events are, you know, at your local library or something like that, because it's such a really neat experience to see it from the reader's eyes.
It absolutely is. And, you know, there's a reader of mine that has been, I think there has been there since the very first book I wrote. And she we've become friends on Facebook, and she was going through some issues recently health-wise. And I happened to notice that she was having a difficult couple of days. And I just reached out to her and I said, look, I've got a book that's not quite ready for prime time, but if you want to be the first person to see it after my wife, I'll send it to you right now.
Aww.
And, you know, she was so thrilled to have that. Now, she's one of my beta readers anyway. I mean, she's on my advanced reader team, so she would have gotten it within a month. But, you know, I'm happy to be able to do that. And it's interesting how that perked her up. It seemed to change her mood. And she later reached out to me saying something about, you know, how that affected her. And I think we forget that. I think that we forget that, like reading a good book takes you out of where you are and puts you in another place in a good way. And I think that our books have the power to do that. And we forget that we help people, you know, we entertain them and we help them think about hard things to think about and difficult issues and get through the everyday life by giving them a way to escape sometimes. And all of that is so important.
Absolutely. And you just nailed it, because I have had that experience too. And it reminds me, like, we have superpowers, you know, because we can take people away. And I mean, you've been in the medical field for a long time. And so I know you've seen people with, you know, illnesses and things. And it's so powerful whenever I hear, you know, I was sick, but your book made me laugh. And that made me feel so much better. That's why I say it's superpowers. And I try not to forget that. But it's great that you can interact with your readers so closely and offer, you know, like the lady a book. Because I think that's another thing that the new industry of writers has been able to do, you know, the indie industry. I mean, you know, Dan Brown is one of my favorite authors, but he's not reaching out to me on Facebook. You know, but we have much closer access, I think, and readers have much closer access to us in the indie market. And I love that.
And when we have the freedom with our books to do things like send them a book funnel link that'll let them download the book and get it a little earlier than anybody else does. I mean, I think that's, you know, that gives us some additional control over our work. And, you know, that's, I think, the important thing to do.
Absolutely. It's so much fun having that you know, control and independence.
So we're kind of wrapping up here. We really have to close out. I don't want to keep you too long. So Sarah, tell us a little bit about where we can find you online. I know you mentioned you have a Facebook page. You have a website as well, I assume?
I do. And my website will send you to wherever you want to go. It's got links to my social media, email, all that. So that is my first and last name, Sarah Nofke at sarahnofke.com. That's S-A-R-A-H, N as in Nancy, O-F-F-K-E.com. And from there, you can find me on Amazon, Facebook, you know, that's where I, you know, hang out the most.
And on top of that, we'll have all those links in the show notes for this episode as well. Sarah, I'd love to, you know, when you do that spinoff series towards the end of the year, maybe I could get you back on to talk about it in a little more detail.
Ooh, I would love that. I've got some really fun things to share about that series. So yay, I'm all over it.
Awesome. All right. Well, then we'll make that happen. In the meantime, best of luck on continuing to get the series out there and to get started on this new project. And we'll be looking forward to reading it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I want to make sure you catch up with us online for a whole lot more, especially from our fantasy-focused community, both on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. You know, the Fantasy Focus group over on Facebook recently crossed over the 2,500 member line, and that's really super exciting. So if you're not yet a member of the Fantasy Focus group, I urge you to head over and check it out. It's a lot of fun. There's lots of stuff that gets posted over there. There's a lot of authors and readers in there who all kind of get together and talk about their favorite fantasy stuff. It's really cool. So do that. Also, over on the website at fantasy-focus.com, on each podcast episode post, there are links to subscribe to the show, so make use of them, and that way you won't miss any of the episodes. We have some pretty awesome guests coming up soon, including the awesome Michael Chatfield in the very next episode, and you'll want to make sure you catch that one. We had a great time on that talk. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books and at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where you can get a free book if you sign up for my newsletter while you're there. Whatever you do, though, subscribe. Come back here for the next podcast. And in the meantime, I'll just remind you to keep your eyes open because, you know what? There's certainly magic all around you.